for me, I'll pray for you. And how about those emoji hens that say, I'm praying for you? We're going to be looking at all that. This is Father Voskin. I'm a priest of the Armenian Church, connecting the dots between, well, all kinds of things, including some stories from Armenia and a story from right down the street. This is episode number 545 of The Next Step. We're inviting you to take it with us right now.
Hi, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. What you're about to listen to is an episode of The Next Step with Father Voskin. Here, Father Voskin provides a very distinctive and consistent voice for Armenian Orthodoxy, based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by our Lord Jesus Christ. We produce these shows every week for a vast audience, which includes those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, to disenfranchised members of the church community, and of course the neophyte, those who are discovering truths in ancient orthodoxy. So we invite you to turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
They ask you to pray, don't they? Or you tell people, I'm going to pray for you. What if they don't want your prayer? You ever thought about that? We thought about it just a few days ago. Since the last time we met here on The Next Step, it has been an incredible few days. This week, especially if you live in here in Southern California, anywhere in California, the whole state is almost like burning. But we've had some wildfires. But just before the wildfire down here in Southern California, we had an episode, one that has become so familiar to all of us. It was a gunning down. It was that shoot down at a bar here in Thousand Oaks. That's right outside of Los Angeles. Last week, while we were doing the next step, it was just unfolding, and I made mention of it. But today we sit here and we realize there's 12 people that have that were shot. We realize the shooter was killed, or he killed himself. 13 people, 13 lives gone. And what is the response that people have? You hear it over and over. You hear newscasters who offer the news. You hear politicians say it. And you hear people of good faith as well. I'll pray for you. You're in my prayers. It's amazing, you know, when you're in Armenia. And I'm sure there are other countries like this. But for me, in Armenia, when I walk down the streets, one of the things that I feel is that safety. It's very interesting. It's not America, and people outside of America may have a hard time understanding what we're doing, walking around with guns and people shooting one another, shooters. But in Armenia, this is kind of an interesting phenomenon that we've felt many times. You walk down the street, and you see kids playing. It kind of reminds me of when we were growing up. You know, we grew up in Los Angeles, big city. I mean, we would be playing outside. We'd be riding our bikes. I'm not talking about to the next block, two blocks away. I'm talking a few miles away to visit with friends. And you know, when the sun came down, we would be back home. An interesting phenomenon. And now that I drive through the streets of Los Angeles many times, and I, especially through my old neighborhood, and I think to myself, wow, did we really do that? Yeah, we did. It was safe. It was a different time. And safety was what dominated that time. You felt safe. We feel that in Armenia. You know, you walk down by the Opera House, crowded area. And, you know, there's no fear. Your children are half a block away playing on their scooters, on their bicycles. They're playing with one another. You've got your head turned. You're not scared of abduction. You're not scared of shooters. And it's interesting here in America. You talk about all the wonders of America, but this is something that is becoming more and more acceptable. And by that, here's what I mean. You know, you'll hear the report about it, and as quick as they report about it, they're just as quick to change their look, their attitude, their demeanor, the way they're talking, the way they're reporting. For instance, a couple weeks ago, we had the synagogue shooting, and, you know, horrible act of hatred. And they will report about it. And then within the next moment. And now let's turn over to sports. Who won the World Series? This was Game 3 of the World Series. And oh, did you see that play? Oh, yeah. And we're just used to this, aren't we? We're used to it. We're reporting about these horrible fires that are going on here in Southern California, in Northern California. We had upward of 50 people are still missing, are dead. And look at this tragic event. And then, meanwhile, last night in the Country Music Awards, yeah, look at that. They are just like dancing and playing over there. Well, so what? That's what we are being bombarded with. I've shared this with you many, many times about the phenomena that we see on social media. Whether it's on Twitter, it's on Instagram, or on Facebook, you can go from the most absurd tragedy that you could imagine, pictures of it and news about it, to pictures of, you know, you fishing with your grandson, to pictures of your kids playing softball. And what happens is that as you're watching these feeds, these news feeds, or you're reading these tweets, you know, the president's tweeting about this and that, and then the next thing is somebody's tweeting about their own personal thing, as you're reading them, they're all on equal, parallel, they're equal ground. So in other words, they have the same value as far as real estate space, right? They're on your screen and they're just moving up. Or down, whichever way it is, right? They're just moving up and down on your screen, whether on your phone, your tablet, or on your computer. These are just news items, all of equal weight. And so this is why we have this phenomena, the Kenned phenomena, don't we? I've shared with you how many times my disgust for this canned laughter that we have in so many soundtracks. What are you laughing about? What are you laughing about? You know, where the two people are sitting around and they're talking about it, and then all of a sudden they talk about their bowels and what's going on, and look at the bathroom up there, ha 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 ha, and everybody starts laughing. What's so funny about this? Well, it isn't funny, but we are conditioned. We are told this is where you need to laugh. We're told that this is not normal, so let's laugh at this point. I challenge you, listen, go to your favorite sitcom, your most despised sitcom, go listen to it, okay, with the soundtrack. Things aren't funny, but we are conditioned, we are told that they are funny by the laugh track. And so too when it comes to prayer, right? Why? We are conditioned to say, I'll pray for you. You're in my prayers. There's a conditioning. There's a process. These are words that we throw out. And, you know, you got to be honest. They are comforting. I mean, we even now have emojis. Emojis that convey this. I'm praying for you. Okay, think about the texts you receive, the messages that you receive, and then you've got these clasping hands. You've got these praying hands there. So I'm not feeling well today, and then somebody sends off an emoji of two hands together. I'm praying for you. Are you? Are you, or is it as simple as a praying emoji? Is that what it is? You know, press a button and we're doing it. I mean, we have a prayer list, a prayer chain, an email prayer group that we run within our Bible study. I have to tell you, I am so impressed by some of the prayers that are offered. It's interesting because it's not just about praying for me. I thought that's how it was going to start off. That's how we established the prayer group. We established it by saying that if you'd like prayers, you know, here's a prayer group, here's an email list. Just drop a line and say, I need prayers today. And then we have the guarantee that everybody on that list will be praying for you. And I just assumed that it would be, okay, here's an emoji. Here's a prayer for you. But But some of the people on that prayer list, you should see the prayers that they write. It is so impressive. It's like conversations with God. And I have to tell you, it's an awakening for me, a good awakening, that you realize that people are getting it, people are understanding. And then along comes this horrific event, a shooter shooting 12 people, innocent people, just standing around and shooting them. And of course, people remember them in their prayers. But something happened that day, and I heard this news item. It was a video, so it was. I heard the woman say this, and I quickly jotted it down because it just struck home with me. And I want to share it with you, okay? This is a story that comes out right after the shooting. Its dateline is November 9th. Mark and Susan Orfanos is the name of the couple. Awoke at 2 a.m., says the story, on Thursday in Thousand Oaks, to a call from a relative in New York. The groggy-eyed couple stumbled into the ritual familiar to parents of Columbine, Blacksburg, Aurora, Newtown, Orlando, Parkland. This is the group of places that shootings have taken place. I was saying a few minutes ago, like, unbelievable. It's phenomenal at this point that there's shooters out there. People shoot. And as of this week, also in the quiet outpost of Los Angeles. Now, Thousand Oaks is right outside of Los Angeles. I have many friends. I had a very close friend who lived there. It's a place that, well, it's considered one of the top three, I think, safest places, safest communities in the United States. Well, that says a lot about what safety means in the United States, doesn't it? The couple waited to find out if their child, who had survived the deadliest gun massacre in modern American history last year in Las Vegas, had perished in another mass casualty shooting. Now, this couple have a child who was in that mass shooting in Las Vegas, the deadliest one. I think something like 50 people were shot down. Las Vegas, this is a country that's not at war, by the way. Or maybe it is. Maybe it's a different kind of war, right? Somebody just shoots them down. This is last year. So this couple had a child who was out there in Las Vegas, and now their kid is there in Thousand Oaks, and they're getting this call. "You're always holding out for hope," Mark Orfanos said in an interview. He and his wife had raced to the Borderline Bar and Grill, where a line dancing night for college students ended when a lone gunman opened fire shortly after midnight. As they waited in crisis center nearby, several survivors told the distressed couple that they thought they had seen their son flee the bar. And that's the hope that you have, right? It wasn't until noon on Thursday that a police officer told them the news. Their 27-year-old son, Telemachus Orfanos, was dead. That marked the end of one grim ritual and the beginning of another. So one ritual is running down to these places and waiting in hope. The other ritual, as the Orfanos parents channeled their private anguish into a public cry for gun control, a cry that has echoed from Aurora to Newtown and beyond. And this was the part that got me. What distinguished their plea was an utter disavowal of the stock response to the violence that claimed their son's life. The stock response, there it is. The canned response. This is what you need to say. And Susan Orfanos says it. She articulates it. She says, "I don't want prayers. I don't want thoughts. I want gun control." She said on the local TV station. "And I hope to God nobody else sends me more prayers." she said this vigorously, shaking her head. She emphasized each word, demanding no more guns. There you have it. You're in my thoughts, you're in my prayers. What does that mean? Here's a woman, straight out. And when you think about it, yeah. How dare we say that? She's lost her son, she's lost life. You're in our thoughts and our prayers. Well, it sounds good, doesn't it? It's comforting, but to who? Are you comforting yourself by telling people that, hey, it's okay, I'm praying for you? And what is that prayer? What is that prayer that you're praying for them? That's what I'm getting at. Okay? I'm not picking on anybody. I am just incensed because we keep doing this. We keep offering prayers, and those prayers need to mean something. This is where I come in. This is what my whole life has been about. Making that faith real, relevant. If I'm going to tell somebody I'm praying for them, that has to mean something. That prayer has to mean something. Because what's behind that prayer is a God. And that God needs to mean something. That's what we get from Jesus Christ. That the God means something. When we talk about God, now we have God in our midst. We understand. That's what Christ did for us. Gave us an opportunity to see the divine. And we as Christians, when we stand and we say, I will pray for you, that word has to be more than a word. It has to be more than an expression. It has to be a complete embrace. It has to mean something. Because I don't blame these people. I don't blame Susan Orfanas for saying, I don't want your prayers, I don't want your thoughts. Yeah, because it's just thrown out there, isn't it? Horrific accident happens. Wildfires consume people's lives. You're in our thoughts and our prayers. And meanwhile, at the World Series, and meanwhile, at the Country Music Awards, you can't do that. This is not social media. This is real media. This is real life. This is real life. And things hurt. You need to pause. And so I'm going to direct you to a prayer. Because this has really touched me in a deep way. Because what's expressed in this past week and in this news article is really the expressions that we have as Christians, what we've been trying to do as the next step, as Armodoxy, is making that faith real so that when I pray, at least for myself, at least in good conscience, I could listen to my prayer and say, yes, that prayer had a meaning. Yes, I am praying. Yes, you will be remembered in my prayers. I'm going to read to you a prayer that comes to us from Scripture. It comes from Psalms chapter 45 in the Armenian Scripture. Of course, many, many more Bibles than the Armenian Bibles have the new notation on it. So this would be in more conventional Bibles, in other words, non-Armenian Bibles, chapter 46. The psalmist writes, God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. The prayer starts off just like that. God is our refuge and strength. It gives the premise, okay, if I'm going to pray, I'm praying to a God who is there as my refuge. I have nowhere else to turn. I don't have anything else. And is my strength, because right now I'm feeling weak, and here is my strength. Therefore we will not fear though the earth should change, though the mountains shake in the heart of the sea, though its waters roar and foam, though the mountains tremble with its tumult. I mean, what the psalmist is talking about is natural disasters that are happening all over. And now we've got phenomena that replicate natural disasters. We get out there and we make the disasters. And as much as we talk about these people in Thousand Oaks, you've got to remember the thousands, hundreds and thousands of people that don't get reported on, whether it's in Africa, in the Middle East, in Syria, the refugees, people dying every day. People being shot every day. They don't get the report, right? And so we are oblivious to them. And what is our reaction? We'll pray for them. What is the prayer? Well, it's not just this prayer. This is only the beginning. It's understanding that God's justice is beyond us. It's understanding that God is beyond us. It's understanding that God is our refuge and our strength during our times of trouble. But here's the key. This is, again, the same psalm. And I challenge you to read the entire psalm, but I want to just focus in on these points right here. He says, "Come behold the works of the Lord, how he has wrought desolations in the earth. He makes wars cease to the end of the earth. He breaks the bow or the bow and shatters the spear. He burns the chariots with fire. Be still and know that I am God. I am exalted among the nations. I am exalted in the earth. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge." To me, there's the prayer. Be still and know that I am God. It's probably the greatest answer that we can give when we say, "You're in my prayers and my thoughts." Perhaps the better answer is to say, "I am going to be still for a moment. Be still and know that I am God." Rather than quickly giving a canned response, to be there in an embrace, to be there as open ears, to be there and be still and recognize that God is God. We're so anxious, and these are natural expressions of the human soul. Something bad happens, you want to do something. You want to reach out. There's nothing wrong with that. I'm not being critical of it. What I'm trying to do is challenge us to have a more fuller understanding of what that prayer is. And here's a key right here. Be still and know that I'm God. To take a moment and just be quiet. To be there. To be in that presence. To realize that God is God. And in that silence, things start coming to you. In that silence, to be still means the silence of the soul. In that silence, we open up ourselves to possibilities, to hearing with the soul, not with ears, but hearing with the soul, to see the other one's pain, to walk in their shoes, to feel their pain. Yes, we all understand that pain. It's horrible. It's horrific. It's pain you do not want to see. But to understand it is at a different level than to actually feel it. Just as I can understand what it must be like to walk 20 miles, but until I put my feet in the shoes of someone else and walk those 20 miles and understand that there are calluses, that understand that there are holes at the bottom of the shoe, and I'm feeling the pavement against my skin, now I'm starting to feel it. And in that stillness, that's what happens. Be still and know that I am God. And what I'm proposing to you is that we elevate ourselves from the canned responses that we give. Yes, they mean well. Everyone means well. I'm not being critical of that. I don't think that there's insincerity in people's responses. I truly believe that when someone says, "You're in my thoughts and our prayers," I believe that they really care. And that's why they're giving a response. What I'm challenging ourselves to do is to understand that that thought and prayer needs to mean something so that the person on the other side can say, "Thank you for that thought and prayer," rather than, "I don't want your thought and I don't want your prayer." Because what she says, Orfano says in the following sentence, she says, "I don't want your thoughts, I don't want your prayers, I want gun control," is really the prayer. I want to control this. I want to stop this. And that's the prayer we all have, right? That's the prayer. I want to stop this. And we have to understand that we're not praying to a God who's a Superman, who's going to, you know, like there's forest fires and Superman would come and he could blow it out with his powerful breath or with his freeze breath, you know, bring rain down on it. That's not going to happen. There's forest fires. People are dying. Oh, let's pray. No. Let's pray for an end to this. How? We need the strength. We need the courage. We need to be out there. We need to start supporting one another. And sometimes we need to just be silent and realize that God is God. And in that silence, we look for those answers. And Orphanos gave us an answer. She says, I don't want your prayers. I don't want your thoughts. I want gun control. We need to take control of that life because it's abnormal. It's abnormal that we live in a society with all of its benefits and all of its goodnesses. It's abnormal that we stand up and hate each other to the extent that we kill each other. And think about it. What we're describing on the streets are just really small little expressions of what we do legally when we call it war. Now you see where it goes. You see the progression of it. And that's why you pray. You've got to stop it. The psalmist says, be still and know that I am God. Let's take a break right now. I play a song every week. I've selected this one. It's called To Silence the Lies of Men. Yeah, pretty nice title. Actually, the way I'm feeling right now, and you probably could tell from my voice, my mouth, the way I'm feeling, I wanted to play a Gor Mkhitaryan song. Voski Arzati of Hankarvats Kun, if I remember right, or the lyrics. I think it's the song Or. I just feel like that. Voski Arzati of Hankarvats Kun. A verse that I could never figure out, just as like everything else, you know. It's like I'm trying to figure it all out. Voski Arzat, gold, silver, and Chankarvatskun means just messed up sleep. Maybe you could tell from my voice right now. Anyway, listen, I'm going to play a song right now for us to get into a more meditative state right now. And it's called To Silence the Lies of Men. It is by Aret Madilian. I hope you enjoy it. To Silence the Lies of Men is the name of that song. Kind of a catchy tune, isn't it? This is kind of one of those interesting albums that I like because of the artwork on the cover. I'd say this must at least be about 20 years old. I hope I can find a link to put on the show notes. But this is one of the older albums I had bought on a Armenian music binge, I have to tell you honestly. It is off of, and I bought this because I really liked the cover art. It was called Mask, Pieces for Piano, and it is by Aret Madilian. The song is called To Silence the Lies of Men. And I thought, you know, wow, we're talking about silence. You know, silence, know that I am God. Be still and know that I am God. And really, in that silence, what do? When we do that, we have no choice but to be honest, because we're listening. Silence to silence the lies of men. Yeah, you can't lie if you're silent. Right? Anyway, I don't know if that's what the musician who wrote this piece had in mind, but it certainly gives you some food for thought. When we're silent, we have the opportunity to listen. And ultimately, we hear God. Why? Because we're hearing God in the voice, in the sounds of everything around us. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed this song. There'll be a link on today's show notes, or as close as to what we could find out there. Don't you feel we're in overdrive lately? Just things are happening too quickly. Oh, yeah, you don't know what overdrive is. It's usually that little button. It's kind of hidden. Oh, this cars still have it. It's like your top gear. It's like, you know, just to go quickly, it loosens up all the gears so that you can go, you know, you can do some speed. And it seems like life is in overdrive. We're just moving. Things are happening right and left. We just got back from Armenia. A couple weeks ago, I shared with you only briefly. I didn't tell you the whole story. And I told you I was going to get to it. And then, lo and behold, we're in the middle of these tragedies, these horrific events. Last week, I shared with you some reflections from the Time magazine article about hatred and about what we're doing and our response. But I want to back up a little bit and share with you a little story that I did not tell you about Armenia. We talked about Sasnashen. We went to Sasnashen. But what may have escaped your attention, I want to bring your attention to it, is a small little story that I mentioned that on our trip there, along with our mission, we took, Susan and I took, Susan's parents, Sam and Jenny Baranian. It was their first time to Armenia. And what you may not know, unless you happen to know people in the Southern California area, both Sam and Jenny dedicated to Sunday school, Christian education of youth. They are an institution for the last 60 years, six decades, count them. They've been in various positions within the Sunday school, from superintendent to the book monitor and everything in between, teacher, assembly leader, friend, confidant. Man, I'm always amazed. I go with my in-laws to their church and the kids pile around them. They all know them, Mr. and Mrs. Baranian. Mr. and Mrs. B, you're the one who taught us this. You're the one who taught us that. And recently at one of our priests' 20th anniversaries, he got up and made mention that my mother-in-law had given him his first Bible. And it set him on the course. And story after story, you hear about them. Well, we had this beautiful chance to go to Armenia with them. And the reason I'm saying this is because last week, we had these horrific fires here in Southern California. And even if the fires weren't in your neighborhood, you could smell them from miles. I'm talking about 10, 20 miles away. You could still smell them. You had ash falling all over the place. Well, my mother-in-law and father-in-law lived across the street from a park that went up, I mean, in flames. And there it was, Sunday morning, my mother-in-law had gotten into her car, was making her way down to St. Peter Armenian Church in Van Nuys to teach Sunday school. I mean, think about this. If she had said, I can't get there, nobody would blame her, right? Because, you know, there's fire, there's smoke all over. But she had to go there and she had to teach. And why? Because we had just gotten back from Armenia. And she was going to be talking about, well, the Sunday school lesson. But this time a little bit differently, right? Because now she had been to these holy sites. The holiest sites, not only for the Armenian people, but in all of Christendom, if you think about it. First Christian nation, and you go to Holy Etchmiadzin, you're there, right? You're there. You are there. You go to Mount Ararat, you are there. You are connecting with biblical history. Yeah, you are there, Mount Ararat. The mountains of Ararat. Wow, you're there. And so on and so on. I mean, there's so many examples of the places that we went, places that we saw. And to be able to take that and now transfer it to the next generations is really a challenge. And it falls exactly into what we've been talking about today. Be still and know that I'm God. The challenge for us to be still in the midst of so much bombarding us is incomprehensible. I mean, think about the news. Think about items that are bombarding you constantly. You've got news feeds. You've got notifications on your phone. You've got notifications on your computers. You've got dinging here and there and everywhere. And in the midst of that, what do you retain? What do you take with you? And so the words, be still and know that I am God. And in that stillness, you are able to see, and this is what happened. My mother-in-law had gone to Armenia. In the stillness of day, she had absorbed the prayers of our ancestors and was now ready to share that with the next generation. And this was really beautiful for me, that in the midst of a day that otherwise people would shy away from going out, she was out there to preach, not in her words, but in the stories that she lived. In other words, through her expressions. Now, while we were together, we had a chance to see a few different things that are quite unusual, that not everybody gets to see. One of them was to go into the Maden Ataran. This is the repository of all the manuscripts, ancient manuscripts. And we had a chance to go backstage, behind the scenes, where they actually repair these manuscripts. It was fascinating. In fact, on one wall, there was just pictures of, what can there be? What do you suppose is on the walls? Now, this is backstage. This is not in the Maden Ataran proper. You go there and you go inside the museum and you're met by curators and you see so much of it. But we were on the other side. We went first to the back rooms, the laboratories where they repair these manuscripts. What do you suppose is on the pictures in the wall? You're not going to guess it, so I shouldn't even ask, right? Pictures of fungi. Yeah, fungus. Mushrooms. Giant pictures of these mushrooms. Why? Because these are the things that they found inside of the manuscripts growing, and they had to remove them. And the different strains of fungi, this is what they were showing on these pictures. And it was just fascinating, fascinating to see all this. And then to go through and now you have a new respect for those manuscripts and the work that is put into, you know, repairing. When you think about the ancient, before the printing press, you would have scribes who would sit and give a lifetime to rewrite. By that I mean, like, in other words, recopy the Bible. They were basically human copy machines. They would rewrite. And sometimes you would have mistakes being made. A monk was a little bit too tired at night and maybe got sloppy in his writing. You would think there'd be a lot of mistakes. And then all of a sudden, the Dead Sea Scrolls, they're discovered. And they find that, you know, in most ancient of manuscripts. And comparing them to manuscripts from today, there's very little, if any, any discrepancy. And then you gotta then definitely at least be open to the possibility of be still and know that I'm God. Know that God is in charge. So we went to the Maden Ataran, but I think one of the highlights for me was Sunday morning. And this is by way of confession. We were looking forward to just going into the church and keeping a low profile and kind of absorbing the local scenery. But that morning, my father-in-law had gotten up and he was wearing his Medal of Honor. This was given to him by His Holiness Karakin I of blessed memory. Yes, the Karakin II from Antilias, from Cilicia, who followed Vazgen I in 1994-95, he was elected. He had a Catholicos, what do we call it? I was going to say like a papacy. What's the Armenian word for it? Catholicosi? He had a reign as Catholicos. How's that, okay? He had a reign as Catholicos for 4 years. A scholarly man, trained in Oxford, theologian, written many books. And he recognized my father-in-law with a Medal of Honor for his contributions to the Sunday school. No. I'm not talking about the contributions you hear about in all the popular newspapers and articles written for the Armenian communities, contributions that are written on checks, on papers. No, I'm talking about a contribution that comes with the sacrifice of time and dedication. And he was recognized with this Medal of Honor. So here we were Sunday morning, and he's wearing that. And I said, you know, we've got to get him into the church proper. It's not going to be enough to just sit in the back. So, exerting some of the influences that we had, I walked into the Holy Zoravar church. This is, Zoravar means the strength, the strong one, and it is a church dedicated to the Blessed Mother, the Astvatazin. And so we walk into this church, and I tell the priest that we have a visitor who has been recognized by His Holiness Karakin I of blessed memory. And right away, we move everybody up to the front into the chancel area. So there we are, Susan and myself, my father-in-law and mother-in-law standing in the chancel area. And all of a sudden, we see cameras there. And so in the midst of these cameras, they photograph us. And we figure out that it's going to be shown on TV somewhere. And this is what was interesting. The following day, we're up in Moscow. And Susie calls and she says, you guys are on Armenian TV. And so in the middle of the Moscow airport, we did a YouTube search and found it. And we'll put the link on today's show notes as well. Do check it out. It's kind of cool. It's on Shalagat TV. So why were they there? Well, it turns out that it was the celebration of Kutchach, the discovery of the cross. Now, I shared with you a little bit about this when we first got back from Armenia, but I want to expand on it because in the midst of the discovery of the cross, we had an opportunity to venerate the cross of Christ. For me, it was a very special one because just 2 months earlier, Susan and I had been in New York where the piece of the cross was also venerated on the feast of exaltation of the Holy Cross. So we had two opportunities within 2 months to be in the presence of Christ's cross. And I want you to think about this for a moment. What does that cross mean? What is the symbol of the cross in our lives? And once again, I'm going to go back. I'm going to connect the dot. When you start thinking about it, you realize that you need to be still and let God be God. Otherwise, as St. Paul says, the talk about the cross is folly to people who do not believe. But once you understand what that cross is about, and the only way you can understand is to be still and know that it is God who is in charge. Once you understand that, then it all starts making sense. Now, these are not just words I'm throwing out. Be still and know that I'm God. On the day of the cross, namely Good Friday, when Jesus was put on the cross, you could not explain that. You could not explain it on any terms. Logically, philosophically, there was just no explanation for it. This man who had just come and preached goodness, had shared his love with the world, was now being put on a cross. Theologically, you understand that this is not just man. This is God incarnate, the one who created the universe, who took the dust and made humans. That same human was now punishing him for doing what? See, what I'm saying is you can't understand it. And the only thing you can do in the face of the cross is to be still so that God can be God. In other words, God manifests himself, and in that stillness we see that he overcomes that cross with a resurrection. If you're not still, you don't see that resurrection. If you're not still, the meaning of prayer is useless. I'm going to pray for you in the midst of your tragedy. No, be still to see what is out there and what is necessary. And so there we were in the presence of the cross. And that was the opportunity given to us in the midst of all these holy and sacred sites. Probably another one was when we were at the monastery of Holy Hedipsime or Saint Hedipsime. Now, if you go to the city of Varshabad or where Etchmiadzin, the word Etchmiadzin is a descriptor. It means literally the place where the only begotten son descended. It's a description turned into a name. Now, within that city, there's several churches. They're very close to me because during my seminary years, we would be assigned to these various churches. So while we were in Etchmiadzin, near the Etchmiadzin, we went and visited Hedipsime. There was Gayane was down the street. There's Shogagad, and of course, Asvazadzin down the street. But we visited Hedipsime, and probably one of the most moving parts for my mother-in-law was when we went downstairs into the tomb of Hedipsime, because you realize it's such a small tomb. And if you are still in your prayer, if you are still to listen to what God is saying, you all of a sudden are made aware that here is this small body, this small person, this otherwise what we would call weak individual who really changed the course of human history. And you're right there. Because it was this single solitary life. This young girl decides to go up against the king, denies the king his request, refuses the king his request. It causes her death, yes. She's killed. So are her companions. But as a result, the king falls ill. As a result, St. Gregory is delivered from the pit of Horvirab to heal the king. As a result, the king is healed and proclaims Christianity as the religion of Armenia, the first state religion. There it is, 301. And as a result, an alphabet is formed. As a result, scriptures are translated. As a result, a nation becomes still and listens to the sound of God for centuries and grows and become the people of God. There it is. One solitary, simple life. And there we were. We were standing in front of the tomb of this single solitary life. I've got to tell you, it's a very, very overwhelming, very profound experience. And that's what we were feeling. And that's what my mother-in-law went on to tell her students and teach. And to me, this is something that we need to be a little bit more receptive to, this idea of moving from the pages of our faith to the reality of our faith. It's just the same as what we started with today. I'll pray for you. Yes, it's beautiful to say it, and we need to say it. And I'm sure, I repeat, I'm sure everyone who says it means it. But for us, it needs to mean something. And in the same way, when we talk about these characters in history, whether it's a Hatshepsut, it's a St. Gregory the Illuminator, whether it's a Vartan Mamigonian or whoever it may be, they need to come up off of the pages. And that's what happened at the tomb of Hatshepsut. That's what happened. The story came off of the pages. That prayer became a different prayer, became a living prayer, became a prayer with different meaning. And all of the prayers, equally valid, equally expressions of our soul, it's just different now. Because you're face to face, you're experiencing that beauty. Now, I want you to now put it in perspective. This is not about taking trips, places, and going, but it's walking in the shoes, taking that moment to feel what others feel. And what it requires is for us to be still, and know that I am God. And that's what happened in front of the tomb of Hatshepsut. We were still. And you realize that God is God. This single, small, tiny little life changed the course of not only Armenian history, human history, the first Christian nation, Christianity. This is where it started. And you're there. Be still and know that I am God. And so today my in-laws, they return. And God bless them. They are energized and sharing that story. And that's what it's about. That's what it's about on all of us. Once you hear, once you know about it, it's to share. Remember the words of our Lord Jesus Christ, who says, "The kingdom of heaven is like a man in search of a pearl, a merchant, and he finds the greatest pearl. Once he finds it, he sells everything he has just to acquire that pearl." That's the kingdom of God. And people such as my in-laws, when they've taught and shared that beauty for the last 60 years with countless number of children, they're the ones who find that pearl. And when we see that, we need to be inspired. I share this story not to applaud my in-laws, but I share it because among the most humble of our servants around us, we see greatness. That's what we saw in Hatshepsut, the most humble and modest servant of Christ changing the world. And likewise, my father-in-law, my mother-in-law, teaching our families, teaching each one of our children, their grandchildren, and now into the next generation, to their great-grandchildren. And this is the beauty. This is the beauty of God being heard. Be still and know that I am God. Sometimes right around us, it's not to just applaud, you know, these are my family members, these are my in-laws. No, it's for us to be inspired, to understand the greatness. Just as Hatshepsut, small, humble, changed the world. How each and every one of us are called by God to use the talents that are given to us to do exactly that. Not to just get out there and say, okay, I pray for you, but to be still, to listen to the sound of God with all of our souls, and then to be the receptacle by which God works his miracles in this world. Think about it for a moment in each and every one of our lives. And then when you say, I will pray for you, you're in my thoughts and my prayers, you know what that thought and you know what that prayer is all about. Let's take a break right now. Susie, make her announcement. I'm going to come back and share with you something, along the same lines.
Susie here again. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. Since 2008, we have been providing quality programming through podcasts, educational videos, and streams, using technology's most current resources. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties, including the challenge to bring peace to a hurting world. To become part of this dynamic ministry, please take a moment now to visit inhisshoes.org website and press on the donate button. Your encouragement goes a long way. Please accept our heartfelt appreciation. Thanks for listening, and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazquez.
Thank you, Susie, for that announcement, and thank you all of our dear listeners for your support, and most of all for your prayers. Yeah. Because I know at least for this few minutes we're together, you are listening, but far from it. We are not the sound of God. We are not the voice of God. But we like to believe that at least we are steering us in the proper direction. So thank you very much for your ongoing support, your prayers, and all the love that you send our way by way of your messages, your emails, and everything gets read. I really, truly appreciate it. I promised you a little story. And this happened last week, last Saturday night. We were invited to the 75th anniversary of the St. James Armenian Church here in Los Angeles, which is my home parish. And I was the MC of the event. It was a wonderful event. In the midst of all those fires and everything, we had a chance to go out to Marina Del Rey, which gave us a little retreat from the smoke. I mean, it was really, really bad smoke down here. And as Los Angeles and the surrounding areas were burning, we were feeling it, heavy, heavy, heavy smoke. But getting out to the marina, we're out by the water, and at least for a few hours, we had a little bit of a reprieve. And we shared some time with friends we had grown up with, many friends we hadn't seen in many, many years. And I was emceeing this event for the 75th anniversary of the parish. It's the Mother Church here in Los Angeles. It's a long story. One day, maybe we could do a little section on St. James itself. I would love to, actually. I started some research on it earlier this summer and have kind of like left it. I do want to do something a little bit more comprehensive before I come out with it. But for right now, let me share with you this small little story, because it happened a couple months ago. I shared it Saturday night at the anniversary party. It's something that happened just a couple months ago. One Sunday morning, we decided to go to St. James Armenian Church here in Los Angeles. And in the morning, as I went into the church, I approached Father Harchun, the parish priest there. He knew I was coming that Sunday, and I went. And as it's the courtesy of clergy, you go in and first you greet the priest and notify them that you're there. And he said, Father Vazquez, this happens to be the first Sunday of the Sunday school. In other words, their new semester is starting. It was September. Back to school, so to speak. He said, if you wouldn't mind, would you go into the Sunday school and maybe address the students and talk with them a little bit? And so I said, I'd love to. So the service started, and I dismissed myself and went into the Sunday school. And there, they have a wonderful superintendent who I think so highly of. She's done a lot. If you happen to be in the Western Diocese, you've read many of her weekly briefings to the Sunday school. Her name is Gail, and she gave me a chance to talk to the Sunday school students. And as soon as I finished, she told me that this Sunday, two of the young men were going to be serving at the altar. She said, Father Vazquez, would you mind taking them? I was going to take them and put shabiks. Shabiks are the robes that they wear. I was going to take them in the back and fit them into a shabik. If you don't mind, I could get to my work. Would you take them into the back and fit them in a shabik? And I said, of course, you know, how can I be helpful? Of course, yes, sure. So these two young men, I take them, and it's their first time going up at the altar. They're going to hold candles. And I took them into the back room, and now I'm looking for a robe. Now, this is my parish from a long time ago. I haven't been there. I don't know where everything is. So I open up one closet, and what do I see? I see an assortment of robes, and in there are a few baby blue powdered robes, which catch my eye, because I remember these robes. It was almost 40 years ago, while I was dating my wife, Susan and I was the assistant to the pastor there at St. James. And during that time, we had something like 20, 30 kids that were going to be ordained as acolytes. And Susan and I were dating at the time, and I realized that, okay, we had these robes made, powder blue, yes. They're usually white, and so are and they have like these usually USC colors, you know, cardinal or gold on there. But this one, they had powder blue robes made, and something was missing: the brocade, the cross on the back. And so Susan and I, we ventured to learn something called silk screening, and we actually made a silk screen of an Armenian cross, and one by one we silk screened all of those robes, something like 20 or 30 of them at the time. And here I was, I'm opening up this closet and finding, in actually very nice form, they had been hanging there. Not all 20, 30 of them, just a few of them, but there they were, with the silkscreen on the back. And what I wanted to share with the attendees at the 75th anniversary is the same thing that I want to share with you. It's that when we celebrate these events, It's one thing to celebrate, but bring meaning to them. And sometimes it means opening up a cupboard. It means opening up a closet. And there you find a piece of yourself. That's what I found. A piece of ourselves. 40 years ago, our love for the church brought us to make this design, brought us to create this small little silkscreen. And there it was, 40 years later, staring at us. Imagine what you can find all around you. Because each of us leaves our footprints in this life. Take some time to celebrate those footprints that you've left. You've done some great things. Sometimes it takes that moment to be silent, to allow God to be God, and to direct you to where that footprint is. It was a very special moment for me. It was a moment that connected me with the past and made me realize that we have so many blessings that we need to be thankful for, and I challenge you to find those blessings in your life, the footprints that you've left, and the impact that you've made in this life. Small as it may be, it sometimes has repercussions that you can't measure. That's it. That's the story I wanted to tell. Hey, I'm going to put a link on today's show notes to the St. James story. They made a nice little video. I want to share it with you. Please do check it out, as well as all the other links we put on our show notes. I want to thank you for joining us today. As I said earlier, thank you for that descriptor of what I feel right now. Gold, silver, and obstructed sleep. Try to figure it out. Listen, I hope you enjoyed today's show. You can connect with us at all the usual spots through social media at themothershipinhisshoes.org. I want to thank you for joining us. On behalf of our producer, Susie, Ken, our technical director, this is Father Boskin, inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of vpostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
I ask you if you're seeing the same sky as we are.